The National Treasury's promise to slash the public service wage bill. What does it mean? We know what it means if it fails to do so for the fiscus. It means we blow out. We run out of money. And by 2025, we went in serious economic trouble. What does it mean for public sector wage unions, for people who work in the public sector? We often assume public sector workers are just faceless bureaucrats born to make life difficult for the rest of us. That's the popular image of what a civil service worker is. But amongst the civil service workers are your kids' teachers, are the nurses and the doctors that you may depend upon should you end up in ICU as a result of a crash or COVID. There are people who do real work in the civil service as well, and they don't get spectacularly paid for their duty. They really don't. But we're talking about crimping their salaries. And then you'll tell me, well, my salary didn't go up this year. Well, I had to take a salary sacrifice this year, and everybody's had to tighten their belts. So why not the civil service? Imran Muhammad is director at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr's employment practice. What is the state of play as things stand right now, Imran?
Good evening, Bruce. Great speaking to you again. Well, currently the state of play is with government's position not to give effect to the third year of the wage deal that was struck with the unions in 2018, there's a massive dispute that's currently pending before the courts. So as important as the information that's coming out in the Zondo Commission and in every other court that considers and has got to deal with corruption every other day in South Africa, the labor courts, and I think it's in fact next week that the court's got to make a determination or consider this dispute relating to government's failure to give effect to the 30 of the agreement.
Okay.
So that's the current state of play.
So we go to court on the 2nd of December, is it? Sorry, remind me.
Yeah, it's the 2nd of December. And what's quite significant about it is that the matter has not even been heard by the Labour Court. It's been heard by the Labour Appeal Court. So that's indicative of the significance of this matter, both on the parts of government, as well as the unions, as well as the Labour Appeal Court, which has been prepared to hear this dispute as a court of first instance. So what that means, a dispute, you'd know, would ordinarily not go to a lower court before it went to an appeal court.
Okay, but what, I mean, do they just look at the pure merits of the law, the law of contract, and say, South Africa, you had a contract with civil servants, you agreed to a three-year wage deal, this is the third year of the wage deal, regardless of the circumstances you find yourselves in, this is the commitment that you made, or can they exercise judgment, if that's not too much of a contradictory term, can they exercise their personal judgment and say, we know that there was a wage deal, but there is a higher purpose here, and that is to stop South Africa going insolvent? Because if South Africa goes insolvent, you're all going to lose your jobs anyway, or many of you will lose your jobs anyway, and that could be even more catastrophic. What do they have to consider?
If Marikana's got anything, is anything to go by, the Labour Court had adopted a very interventionist approach at particular stages of the dispute in at Marikana. So the court had done something that courts don't normally do, which is to call parties to sit around a table to try and resolve matters. And that was very interventionist. I personally thought it was a good approach in light of what was transpiring at the time. So there is that precedent in relation to what had happened in Marikana. But in the ordinary course, courts must determine law. Now, what's intriguing in this particular matter is that one of the arguments that's being raised by government relates to an issue of authority. And government takes the point that after giving effect to the agreement for 2 years, in its third year of the agreement, well, it can't do so. And one of the arguments is, well, its chief negotiator did not have authority to conclude the agreement.
No. Come on. That's pitiful as an argument, because you sent the chief negotiator in to do the job. I mean, surely that gets thrown out with the contempt that it deserves.
To get back to your question and the million-dollar question, and we'd hoped in South Africa that government had lots of millions of dollars. is the Labour Appeal Court going to look at this strictly from the perspective of law, or is it going to look at it with more judgment, as you say? an analysis from a legal perspective does create a whole host of problems. And I venture to suggest that an argument in relation to affordability is going to have a flow-on effect into the private sector. Because the moment government takes the position that I can't give effect to an agreement that I concluded 3 years ago, it's an affordability argument, which we all come to accept. If a court accepts that and gets to that point, well, what prevents employers in the private sector adopting a similar sort of approach, particularly in the current circumstances? So it unravels collective bargaining very quickly in South Africa, which is rather problematic.
Wouldn't that be a good thing, the end of collective bargaining? I mean, I realize that it's created a safety net, but it's also made us a bit complacent and a bit lazy, and it's had quite significant wage inflation implications in the public sector over time.
That it is, though I would not put that squarely at the foot of collective bargaining in this sense. Essentially, everything suggests two big problems that's occurred over a period of time. We're in the current dilemma that we face. Firstly, because there's been above inflation wage deals over a number of years at the level of bargaining at the chamber level. So that's been one of the reasons. The second is the average earnings in the public sector is much higher than it is for a comparable position in the private sector. So those are affordability problems which would have required that when government got to the table to negotiate, that it had done it some stopping and had known what was the extent of its ability to negotiate. Now, you can only imagine that negotiation in the public sector that is effectively the largest employer in the country. The government employs, I think it's close to 1.3 million employees. How complicated collective bargaining is in that sector. When last did we have a national strike in the public sector? 10 years ago. And that's indicative of successes of collective bargaining. Now, Bruce, you correctly said in the introduction, the public sector is generally, by all of us, what comes to mind is this massive bureaucracy and an inefficient bureaucracy. But behind that bureaucracy lies doctors, yeah, lies police, lies educations, lies universities, lies every bit that actually keeps stability in this country. So the citizenry in this country requires a stable sector where there are bureaucrats that are happy in their jobs and have the ability to deal with things properly. What we currently have is problematic, notwithstanding the difficulties that we financially face.
Yep, it's a really complex issue, and thank you for spelling it out as clearly as you have this evening. Imran Mohammed, who's director at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr's employment practice.